everybody. Welcome to episode 654 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
And this is Nick.
And this is a Marvel Chronology episode, and we're continuing our look at Thanos. We're finally getting into the classic era of Thanos. We started with the Thanos Rising miniseries, which I really enjoyed, from Jason Aaron, with art by Simone Bianchi. I think you really enjoyed it too.
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit. It's like a more modern comics retelling, where it's not as bogged down in retelling the same thing over and over and over, like we experienced with Secret Wars as well.
Yeah, and then, you know, we did talk about Thanos' first appearance ever in Iron Man 55, which was a little eye-opening. It was pretty corny. It was pretty cornball, I gotta say.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. And then we discussed in depth how weird it was to even have him in that book and why that happened.
Yeah, and honestly, when you think about it, so that book is like in high demand now. Like, as soon as the rumors started to swirl, I mean, you look at the issue before it, Iron Man 54, take a look at Iron Man 56. In comparison, those issues were always less expensive. I mean, Thanos has always been a pretty popular character, and so it was always more sought after than the issues surrounding it. And then when Thanos came back in the Infinity Gauntlet series in the 90s, again, renewed interest, renewed popularity, and the book took another little jump. But nothing compared to, as soon as the rumor started that Thanos might appear in an Avengers movie, that book just shot up. It went from like a $40, $50 book to like $100, and then continued to climb. And I think it's like $300 plus now, if not more, depending on the grade. So it's a pretty hard book to get a hold of. But what's interesting is, so his first appearance, people want it, but it's not really the Thanos that they're going to know. Like, if somebody that loves Thanos mm-hmm. from the movies or the MCU goes to pick it up, that's not really the Thanos they know. And it's not even that great of a story, even considering the time period. It's pretty clunky.
Agreed.
So it's kind of interesting.
It's just a weird, like, as we discussed, it's just a weird combination of events happening just so that, because Iron Man has to be in the story because Jim Starlin's doing it in the Iron Man book. So a character that should not be related to Thanos, at least in his first encounter,
not
is suddenly
all
thrust into space.
Yeah,
not even space, but somewhere else on Earth or whatever.
Yeah, but it makes a lot more sense when he starts showing up in Captain Marvel, which we'll get to those. We'll get to our first Captain Marvel issue next Marvel Chronology episode, so next week. But the other thing that I wanted to mention, because at some point we're going to have to cover it if we – because I would like to probably finish out this year. I would like to probably stay on Thanos for this whole year. Like, when does the next Avengers movie – does it come out this year or is it 2020?
It's this year. It's like April 27th or something.
Oh, wow. It's a lot quicker than I anticipated. Well, based on that –
Captain Marvel in March and then that.
Wow. Back, not even giving Captain Marvel a chance to have some legs. Jeez.
They'll both do fine, I'm sure.
but anyway, based on what happens in that movie, I mean, I don't know, maybe Thanos' popularity will just fall off a cliff and we won't keep doing it. But I would like to get through a significant chunk of Thanos' chronology. So,
well, he reached a new level of popularity just this week. He was on the Simpsons opening credit couch gag.
Really?
This week. And I'm like, that's big time. Now he's Vader big if he's on The Simpsons. Like, he turns everyone to dust except for Maggie, and then she sits with him on the couch.
And wow. I'm gonna have to find that online and take a look. That's
it's like 15 seconds. It's hilarious.
That sounds interesting. But the reason I bring it up is because we did have another series announced starring Thanos that is early days of Thanos that we're probably gonna need to incorporate into this Thanos chronology pretty early on, but I don't know where exactly. I mean, I'm not an expert on Thanos as far as chronology goes, so I may reach out to the guy that runs the Crushing Crisis website. That's where we got our Thanos reading order from. There's a link in the show notes. You can go and check it out. It's an amazing site. It's one of the best sites on the internet for reading orders. I highly recommend it if you're just looking to get a comprehensive history of, like, I mean, he splits it up Marvel, DC, Independence, or you can just go and click a character, like click X-Men, click Avengers, Captain America, Superman, whatever. Just go and click the character and he's going to give you a breakdown. And not only does he have a list of, you know, all the books these people appeared in again, not a publishing order, but a chronological order. So you can read their earliest stories first. That's why Thanos Rising was first in the Thanos reading order. But it's really a great resource if you want to dive deep into a character. But where this new series is going to fit, it's got to be pretty early on. Apparently it's a 5-issue miniseries. I can't remember off the top of my head who's writing it, but it's basically explaining why Thanos adopted Gamora as his daughter.
Oh.
So I got to think that fits in pretty early, certainly before the end of the classic Thanos section of the reading order that we're about to start right now, which is Captain mm-hmm. Marvel and Avengers, basically. And there's some Marvel 2-in-1s in there and everything. But it's got to go pretty early, I imagine. So
that sounds like a good book, too. Like, that sounds like something I want to read for sure.
Yeah, and I'll look
that
up
the story.
I'll look up the details, and I'll have it a little more knowledge of it next episode. I saw it briefly, came across it, and I should have paid more attention, but I think I was busy doing something else at the time. But I'll definitely find out creative team, and I think it's a 5-issue mini, and I'll get a release date, and that I'll have the info next episode. So let's go ahead and get to the book that we're going to talk about today. It's again, you know, talk about having him show up in an Iron Man book and having that be strange. So Marvel had the license way back in, and I don't even know when this book came out. Let me take a quick look here. Marvel had the license to a pretty popular science fiction movie that came out in 1977. It's Logan's Run, which have you seen that movie, Nick?
No, I've heard about it a lot. When I was at Warner Brothers, they were trying to figure out how to remake it. But I haven't. And I know, like, I know all the pop culture references from it. But no, I've never actually seen it.
Well, it's a pretty good movie, actually. What's the guy's name? Michael York is the guy who stars in it.
Yep.
And I remember
later in Austin Powers.
Yeah, and I remember seeing it when I was a pretty little kid and not really understanding it. I mean, I think I probably saw it. I don't know. Maybe it was on TV, maybe VHS in the early 80s. Probably on TV, actually, when I think about it. So I was, I don't know. I'm sure I was less than 10 years old when I saw it for the first time. Because I remember seeing it and not completely understanding what was going on. But anyway, Marvel had the license to it, and they basically adapted the story of the movie in the first 6 issues of Logan's Run. And then I think the series ran 8 issues. They tried to keep it going, telling some original stories in the kind of the setting of the movie. It didn't exactly work out for them. You know, only lasted 2 issues, but I guess they needed, when they got to the end of issue 6, like based on how they paced the story out, they didn't have quite enough story to fill the whole issue. So they put in this backup story with Thanos in it. And, you know, it's quite a few years after Iron Man 55 came out. He hadn't shown up anywhere else. And why the writer, Scott Edelman, chose to write a story. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he read the Iron Man story. Like, I don't have a background mm-hmm. on this Logan's Run much. Like, I've read Edelman talk about it before, but he's never said, oh, yeah, so I fell in love with the character. I wanted to write this story about Thanos and Drax. It just because it kind of changes the story, and you'll see when we get to the synopsis, it changes the story a little bit in terms of Drax's origin that we saw in Iron Man 55. It kind of tweaks a little bit, makes it better, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And again, this is the Drax that I love, the green skinned Drax with the purple suit, the yellow belt. This is my Drax. I know a lot of people love the Dave Bautista look, whatever, with the red tattoos around the eyes, whatever. That's just not my Drax. To me, this is Drax with the giant purple disco collar and the cape. And that's just to me, just this is who Drax is for me. So, but the other thing that's interesting about it, so Scott Edelman as a writer, as I mentioned, this is Mike Zeck. This is early Mike Zeck work. It may be the earliest Mike Zeck work I've ever seen. I can't remember ever seeing his name before on something earlier that I've read. But the thing is, so this is the guy, if you'll remember, Nick, who did like all the covers to Secret Wars, did most mm-hmm. of the issues with the exception of a couple that Bob Layton did. But yeah, if you put this right alongside an issue of Secret Wars, I don't think you could, you know, unless you knew, I don't think you could recognize it as the same artist. He hadn't really defined his style yet. He hadn't really refined it, maybe. as much as he does later on. And he is also, he's inking himself here too. So that might make a difference as well. I'm not real sure, but anyway, what'd you think of the story? Like first impressions.
It's just, I don't know. It seems almost more of a soft reboot, to use current movie terms, where it's like, we're going to take our spin on Thanos and Drax, but the story's not really all that important.
Yeah.
With this little tiny back thing. Like, it's kind of, you know, it's a typical superhero, supervillain story. I'm going to destroy something. And I mean, we'll talk about banding and stuff when we get there and the way Drax was changed. But yeah, it's not like, it's not the Thanos I know being a child of like comics post 2000s and the movies.
Yeah, but I would say this is closer to the modern Thanos than we got in the Iron Man issue.
Oh,
the
Iron absolutely. Man issue,
he's totally just a mustache twirling villain. He's not, and so at least here he's seems a little more menacing. Doesn't just seem like villain of the week. That Iron Man issue, he almost seems like he stepped right out of an episode of Smallville, right? Like Freak of the Week, you know. But here he seems,
the robot version too.
Yeah, here he seems a lot more, I don't know, menacing. A lot more like menacing because he's intelligent, because there's depth to him. Like he's, mm-hmm. But you're right as far as what he chooses, like the reason that he's on this planet. Yeah. So let's dive into it.
It's he's really, also more. It also is more hands on. It seems, doesn't he? Like have a lot. He has a lot of henchmen doing his work.
Yeah, I remember he had like the Blood Brothers or whatever they were in the
Iron Man. Who changed color. Yeah.
Oh, just wait till we get to Captain Marvel issues. You want to talk about bad color work. So, all right. Anyway, this issue, as I said, written by Scott Edelman, Mike Zeck as the artist, Susan Fox handling letters, and Petra G on colors. It's called The Final Flower. That's right. I didn't say The Final Frontier. It's not Star Trek. The Final Flower. And it starts off, Thanos is in this temple and he's holding a flower saying, "Puffa! How easily these priest kings fell. 'Tis a pity that there is so little challenge in this most meaningful task." His most meaningful task is to destroy the last thing of beauty apparently on this world. It's the final flower. And this world, this distant planet whose name is unpronounceable apparently, had this flower, like the last beautiful thing on the planet. The flower was sacred. They said prayers to the flower. And Thanos is here to destroy, you know, Thanos the Destroyer. And also here to destroy Thanos, we see in the background on the splash page, is Drax the Destroyer. And the Destroyer who will not allow it. His goal is to stop this destruction from happening.
Was Thanos known as the Destroyer for a while?
Thanos the Mad
Titan. Because it's always been Titan. Drax the Destroyer.
Yeah, Drax
Thanos, the
Destroyer.
Mad Titan Thanos.
Yeah, but he's been called a Destroyer of Worlds.
Galactus. Yeah. Devourer of Worlds. Different.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay.
Yeah, so Thanos decides that as he's murdered all these priests, they've sacrificed their lives trying to save this final flower. And Thanos says, as soon as I smash this religious relic, this planet's opposition to me will wither as well. And the well is because Drax shows up, interrupts him, saying, "Restrain your celebrations, Thanos. It is for this world to rejoice, for today you die." Again, Drax supposedly formed from nothing, right? I mean, we saw Mentor just like pull him up out of a planet and like kind of create him. Think like Zeus creating Wonder Woman or something, just created out of clay.
That's exactly what I thought.
his only purpose to be to destroy Thanos, thus the name Drax the Destroyer. So Thanos is not convinced. He says, "You may have caught up with me once more, fool, but this doesn't mean that your assault's going to be any more successful than the last time." And again, you get the impression that it's not like, and we got this impression in Iron Man 55 also, it's not like this is only the second time these two have tussled. This has been a long, ongoing battle. So as these two are fighting on top of this raised dais, almost like the top of a mountain with these pillars. It's clearly a sacred temple, but also a place where citizens of this planet make a pilgrimage to see the sacred relic. So unbeknownst to either one of them, coming to pray are a mother and daughter walking up kind of the spiral path that winds up the side of this mountain. So Drax says, "Empty words, Thanos. If we must speak, let it be of power." And he fires his bolts at Thanos. Thanos shrugs it off like, "Whatever, dude. You're annoying me." And we see the mother and daughter have almost reached the top, talking about their six-month journey to see this relic. And Drax,
how do they not hear what's going on?
Yeah. They
they're surprised when they get to the top. They're not hearing people blasting each other.
Yeah, they didn't hear the
cosmic rays.
Or the shakoom.
Or even just him shouting, "Power!"
Yeah, exactly. You would think. And especially because it's dark. I mean, it's kind of strange, the setting. It's like they're out in space almost, or at least it's nighttime, because you can see the stars and the sky is black. You'd think they would, even if they didn't hear anything, they'd see like these blinding flashes of light. So anyway, Drax says, "My power is never useless. I exist only to see you die. For as long as I live, your eventual death is a certainty." So he's never going to give up. Drax is never going to give up. His purpose for existing is to destroy Thanos. So there's another big shakow as Thanos fires off a force blast, and that one seemed to rock Drax. He's kind of down on his hands and knees, and Thanos is saying, "You know what, as entertainment you fascinate me, but I won't let you interfere with my plans again. You've begun to bore me." And as he says that, the mother and daughter reach the top of the little temple there, and the mother freaks out. This is blasphemy. The sacred seedling is being desecrated by a monster. It must not be. And the fire is actually on the ground near Thanos's heel. And this woman is, I mean, this flower must mean a lot to these people, because she abandons all sense of self-preservation, runs over, starts beating Thanos on the back. "You fiend, what manner of creature are you? How could you?" And her daughter's trying to hold her back, saying, "No, mommy, no, he'll hurt you. Don't make him angry." So Thanos turns around, lifts them both up by the scruff of the necks, like, "You angry insects? Do you not realize the power that I possess as Thanos? I could, without a thought, take your soft, tender flesh and do this." And he tosses them off the side of the mountain, off the top of the temple.
And it says, "Poink."
Yep, a little. They bounce once. Effect. Little. They bounce once. Poink, and go flying off the edge. with the daughter yelling, "Mother, help me!" And the daughter saying, "My child, no!" And
then Drax with the longest face ever drawn in comics. The longest
face ever drawn in comics. Because okay, if you look at the previous page,
chin drop.
If you look at the previous page, like the panel in the upper right, like the page that has in the upper left, the bzzz. If you look in the upper right with Thanos, there, the picture of his face, and he's got the he's got his fist clenched. That looks like the most like Mike Zeck that I know. Mike Zeck's art, that it's almost recognizable as Mike Zeck, more so than any other panel in the entire book. And then you go to the horse face Thanos. With, that's the least like Mike Zeck. It doesn't even look like the same artist. But so
Horseface Drax.
Horseface Drax, right. Sorry, Horseface Drax. Green horse, apparently. Straight out of Dr. Seuss. But anyway, so here's where the change comes in, right? Here's where we're getting additive. And you wonder how much of this was editorially driven, how much of this was Edelman just wanting to make change. I mean, this is a character that Starlin created from whole cloth. So you just wonder how much input he had into this change. But it says, as mother and daughter plunge to their doom, images of another mother and daughter flit through the destroyer's mind. He's remembering that he had a wife and child. So that makes no sense. That doesn't gel at all with the origin that we know of from Iron Man 55. Because supposedly Mentor just, you know, pulled this guy up out of the ground. He's, you know, some soulless just creature. So Drax gets this image in his mind of a burning car, a mother and child dead, and they were killed by Thanos supposedly many years in the past during the destroyer's previous lifetime as Art Samson. So again, that's all new for us, right? And suddenly he knows that even as Thanos escapes, he's got to, for the very first time in his existence, abandon his purpose, abandon the whole reason for existence, destroying Thanos, because he's got to save these two. He won't let another mother and daughter die. So Thanos is laughing at him. He's still standing on the top of the temple laughing. Ha, you fool. Now I get to escape. But before he does, a stomp on the flower. He says, now it's done, as he grinds the flower below his boot heel. And by the time Thanos gets back up to the top with the mother and daughter safely in his arms, he says, no, the Destroyer has not yet finished with you, Thanos. He says, Destroyer? After letting me go so easily, you dare still use that name? And Thanos teleports away. And all Drax is left with is the sound of his echoing laughter. And the mother says, you should have killed him. He crushed the flower, the last sacred bloom. You should have let us die. You could have, and again, man, what the heck is up with this flower? It must be like, roll it up and smoke it, and it's like the best high ever. She's willing to sacrifice her life for the rest of the planet to get high or something. And Drax, Art Sampson, apparently says, but I could not, for then I would have been as evil as Thanos. And the hunt goes on. So it's interesting. At this point, you got to think, okay, well, they just completely changed his origin. Throughout whatever, like you were saying, soft reboot. And what does that mean for Iron Man 55? So they eventually marry the two together. They do kind of explain it away as when Art Sampson was basically became Drax. He had his memories wiped away, so he didn't remember, and he had that false memory of being created by Mentor, or by Kronos, rather. And so that he wouldn't have the distraction for exactly this reason that we see happens in this. But then we also find out later on that his daughter didn't die. She becomes Moondragon. And most recently, with the Infinity Wars miniseries that just came to an end a few weeks ago, we had a follow-up epilogue called Infinity Wars Fallen Guardian. And based on some events that happened at the end of in the Infinity Wars miniseries, the Drax part of Drax the Destroyer and the Art Sampson part of Drax the Destroyer were separated for the first time. And we get to see Art Sampson sort of get a new lease on life in sort of an alternate reality where his daughter and a wife did not die. And he gets to kind of be happy. And Drax, apparently, we only get like one page of what happened to the Drax half. And he's off fighting monsters in some other dimension. So I guess he's being the Destroyer and sort of fulfilling his wish to be happy and fighting as well. But I'm sure it's not the last we've seen of Drax. He's become far too popular. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting is at the end when they split him up, the Drax persona looked much more like this classic Drax than the Dave Bautista Drax. So again, I don't know how much input Starlin had into this. I do think that adding a human persona to Drax and giving him more depth of character and origin makes him a more interesting character than the kind of cheesy two-dimensional story that Starlin came up with. But again, I'm a huge Jim Starlin fan. I love Jim Starlin. I think the guy's a living legend. He's a master of the comic book medium. I'm really kind of saddened that we won't get much more, if any, Jim Starlin art, because he's an incredible artist as well. But he hurt his hand a few years ago, and he's more on the writing side now than doing much art. But you got to remember that Iron Man 55, that's like the first comic the guy ever did. So you got to cut him some slack if it seems a little, you know, cornball. I'm not disparaging him at all, because again, I think he's a living legend. He's a master. If his name's on a book, I'll pick it up purely on that, on the strength of that. So, but I would be interested in talking to him about Drax specifically. I think, other than he didn't create Captain Marvel, but for me, he put his stamp on Captain Marvel. He made Captain Marvel into who he is. And we'll see that evolution, some of that evolution, when we start talking about the Captain Marvel comics. But next to that, Drax is actually my favorite. This classic Drax is actually my favorite creation of his. And then third would be Thanos. His work on Captain Marvel, then Drax, then Thanos, then probably Dreadstar, if any of you listeners are familiar with that character. So I like the story, but again, it's without context, the story is kind of a meh.
Yeah, what I was alluding to before is, yeah, the most interesting part of the story is the final decision to not protect what Thanos is after, but to let Thanos win so that he can save the lives of the two people, which is why the story, I guess, exists and why it's actually interesting.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that would say, well, this isn't even a Thanos story. This is a Drax story. And I kind of got to agree with that. Because you're fleshing out, you're adding layers to Drax as a character. You're not doing much to Thanos here, other than he does come across as a little less maniacal and a little more menacing.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
But as far as the story goes, yeah, there's not a whole lot here. But to give Scott Edelman credit for what there is, it is a significant change to Drax, and it does give a little food for thought. Like, okay. Your whole reason you've been told that you exist is here, but something happens that makes you turn your back on that. So now what? I mean, is Drax going to continue to question his existence, or is he going to put this event out of his mind? I mean, I it's been so long since I've read any early Drax appearances. I don't remember him ever having self-doubt about who he is based on this event, but it would be a cool thing to see a modern writer refer back to.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the art goes, like I said, it's certainly not the powerful Mike Zeck art that we're used to. But you can see that this artist definitely has talent. The storytelling is where this art really shines. The transitions from panel to panel, the layouts within the panels, and it's sufficiently cosmic too, which I don't know that I've ever seen Mike Zeck draw a cosmic story. Secret Wars is about as cosmic as anything he's ever done, I would think. Because you think about, like, at least for me, when I think about classic Mike Zeck stuff, I'm thinking of Punisher or... I just had it. I mean, he's done a ton of covers like G.I. Joe. He did a lot of the covers. He did the covers for the Kraven's Last Hunt. But when you're talking about interior work, oh, Captain America, that's the other series that he's done quite a bit of. So more street level characters. You don't really think of him as like classic superheroes. So, but no, I did enjoy this, the story for what it was. I hadn't ever read this story before. And so being such a fan of Drax, I was like, this is cool. This is where Drax found out he had a previous life. And it does. And I don't think it diminishes his desire to want to destroy Thanos. If anything, you would almost think it would strengthen it, right? Like before he just thought, well, my only reason for existing is that Kronos created me to destroy Thanos. And that's why I'm called Drax the Destroyer. But now I actually have a personal stake in seeing him destroyed. He killed my wife and daughter. So it definitely adds some motivation. So
it'll make it more interesting going forward, I'm sure. Which is why this was the soft reboot, like I said, a little change that adds everything.
Yeah, and being
all the context.
Yeah, and being that this is a Thanos chronology, we're gonna see a lot more of Drax going forward. So well, like I said, it is a relatively short story. So I don't know that we have that much more to say about it. Any last thoughts, Nick?
No, it's funny which book we're getting a Thanos story from.
Yeah,
which Logan. Still delights me to no end.
Did you read any of the Logan's run? Because I completely
skipped. I didn't have time. I read this all like 30 minutes ago. Yeah,
I
haven't seen Logan's run, so I'm like, I'm not gonna spoil the movie with the Marvel adaptation.
Totally skipped it. Yeah, that's another one you need to add on your must watch list. All right, so I guess that's going to do it for us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.